Netanyahu to address Congress. Kazem Abu Taha is a displaced Palestinian from Rafah.
Netanyahu is embraced by the Americans. He is being provided with meals, food, and drinks. He is being hosted in Congress while we are being killed and slaughtered. We are being slaughtered by American planes, American ships, American tanks, and American troops. Everything that we are killed with is American. Biden blesses any operation and any killing and any massacre. The U.S. blesses it. Congress blesses it. Biden blesses it. And the White House blesses it. So the United States is not a partner. It is the reason for the war.
We're joined right now by three guests taking part in this week's protests. Noah Gryevsky is an Israeli-born member of Jewish Voice for Peace. Linda Sarsour is a Palestinian-American Muslim organizer attending today's mass protest. And Beth Miller is the political director of Jewish Voice for Peace Action. Beth, let's begin with you. Describe what you did yesterday and what your demands are. Now, dozens of Congress members and senators, not to mention Kamala Harris herself, who is the person who would be presiding over this joint session of Congress, but because Netanyahu is addressing, will not be there.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on, Amy. Yesterday, Jewish Voice for Peace organized a sit-in at the Capitol to make it very clear that we, as American Jews, think it is absolutely shameful that congressional leadership has invited a war criminal who is currently leading a genocide of Palestinians in Gaza to address a joint session of Congress. It is an affront to the ideals of human rights and of freedom and of democracy. And in this moment, in this week, we felt it was absolutely critical. Jewish Voice for Peace organizes protests to make clear that we, as Jewish Americans, are speaking out and saying that this cannot happen in our name. And more specifically, to make clear that we need to keep the focus on what our government is doing. We are not simply watching something terrible unfold in Gaza. The Biden administration and Congress have sent weapons and billions of dollars in military funding to the Israeli government that is using those weapons and using that funding to carry out a slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza, almost 40,000 people killed, including 15,000 children, starvation. We're on the brink of famine in Gaza. And so the message of this protest was to say, we are calling for an arms embargo now. We, our government, the United States government, has to end its complicity in this genocide. And if we want to reach a desperately needed ceasefire, that means we need to pressure the Israeli government, pressure the Netanyahu regime, and say, enough, we are not sending any more weapons. We're enacting an arms embargo now. And that was the clear message of this protest.
And Beth Miller, in previous years, there's been basically complete unanimity in Congress in support of Israeli actions. How do you assess what is happening this time, especially in terms of members of Congress either staying away or voicing their displeasure and their opposition to Netanyahu's speech?
Yes, for so many years, there has been wall-to-wall, bipartisan, unquestioning complicity in Israel's atrocities and human rights abuses against Palestinians. And right now, I think what we're seeing is that more and more Democrats in Congress are starting to catch up to where the Democratic voting base is. Most Democrats do not want to see our tax dollars funding human rights abuses, apartheid, and now genocide in Gaza. And so you see what we're seeing now is more and more Democrats who are seeing that actually Americans and the Democratic voting base is done with this. We are fed up and we are taking action and we are demanding an end to this complicity. And for that reason, we're seeing more and more Democrats start to take a stand. And so right now, today, that means people who are going to be boycotting or protesting that speech. And we applaud all of the members of Congress who are boycotting and protesting this speech. That is absolutely what needs to happen. And there are other things as well. Members of Congress who, for example, chose to vote no on the additional military supplemental bill that passed in April. Members of Congress who are speaking out and calling for a ceasefire and calling for an end to this, the complicity of our government.
I'd like to bring in Linda Sarsour as well. Linda, could you talk about your reaction, especially to the decision of of Vice President Kamala Harris to be absent in Congress from this speech by Netanyahu.
Thank you, Juan. I want to send a message to our movements. We have created the political circumstances to make standing behind Benjamin Netanyahu, a war criminal, untenable. Kamala Harris and her team knew from the months of mass mobilizations, mass organizing, and the immense support for ceasefire and for the Palestinian people coming out of the Democratic base, that there was no way that she could be in the same room with Netanyahu and engage in any ovations or any applause. So that is a reason from our movements. We are the ones that created the space for Kamala Harris to decline to preside over the speech.
And talk about the organizing, Linda, that is going on today as we hear about busloads of people coming in from around the country. Yesterday, 400 Jewish activists, including a dozen rabbis, arrested in the Cannon Rotunda. Today, thousands.
This is the result of our young people across this country who have been leading mass mobilizations in every corner, in every city, including here in Washington, D.C. This protest is not just about Benjamin Netanyahu specifically. And the demand is to the United States government, arrest Benjamin Netanyahu. He is a war criminal, and the International Criminal Court is seeking to issue an arrest warrant. And there is leadership across the world that has said, if Benjamin Netanyahu steps foot in our country, we will arrest him. Both Democrats and Republicans literally have invited and rolled out a blood-soaked red carpet for a war criminal. And we are here to send a message to the rest of the world that while our leadership cowers to a war criminal, we say Benjamin Netanyahu is unwelcomed here in the United States.
I wanted to bring Noah Gruevsky into this conversation, Israeli-born member of Jewish Voice for Peace. She was there yesterday in the Cannon Rotunda as hundreds of people got arrested on the eve of Netanyahu's address. Can you talk about also the hostage family protest outside? They, too, were calling for Netanyahu and for the U.S. to immediately sign off on this ceasefire deal to bring the hostages home. You yourself know one of the hostages in Gaza right now.
I do. Thank you so much for having me, Amy. So my cousin's very close friend, Hirsch Goldberg Polin, was 23 years old when he was taken hostage from a dance and music festival on October 7th. We don't know if he is currently alive. And while I can't speak for the immediate families of the hostages, what I can say is that it is clear that while this genocidal war campaign is waged against Gazans and against Palestinians and has killed over 39,100 people, probably many more, our hostages are being held in Gaza as well, and their lives are in danger, both in terms of how they're being treated as hostages and because they are in a war zone where there are an extraordinary number of bombs dropping and an incredible amount of violence. We don't know if our family's friend Hirsch is alive. We pray that he is. But ending this genocidal war campaign, while it will most, of course, positively affect Gazans, Palestinians in the West Bank as well, Palestinians in the Palestinian diaspora, will also protect Israelis, both Israeli hostages and Israeli citizens.
And Noah, could you talk to us about your own family's history? You're a Palestinian Jew, multiple generations in Palestine.
Yes, of course. Thank you. So the phrase Palestinian Jew is not one that is widely known and used to my knowledge, but it is used to describe the small percentage, probably around 1-2% of Jewish people and Jewish community that lived in the region of Palestine long before the State of Israel was established. My family has been in the region of Palestine for hundreds of years before the State of Israel was established, for most of those generations in the city of Jerusalem. My Jewish family members spoke Arabic, lived in integrated communities with Palestinians who are both Muslims and Christians. And so something that I think about often is how in 1948, during the establishment of the State of Israel, many people that my grandmother, great-grandfather, great-grandmother were friends with, were colleagues with, worked with, people who worked for them, were displaced from their homes, their neighbors, their dear friends. In fact, my grandmother has told me that my great-grandfather worked tirelessly to try to bring people who were close to their family, who were Palestinian Christians and Muslims, back into Jerusalem after 1948 unsuccessfully. And so when I see ceaseless bombs dropping, famine escalating, viruses spreading among refugees in Gaza, and violence against refugees in the West Bank, I feel personally both responsible and implicated, because the same Palestinian, Arab, Muslim, and Christian families and their descendants who protected my Jewish family for generations and who were good neighbors to my Jewish family for generations, I imagine, are those who are being slaughtered. And while they were my grandmother's and great-grandfather's and great-grandmother's friends and neighbors, and while they were at times protected by their friends and neighbors, and allowed to gain economic security and a fair and equal standing within society, I feel that it is my responsibility as the descendant of my lineage to make sure to be vocal and take risks to protect their safety.
Democratic Congressmember Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, the only Palestinian-American member of Congress, said in a statement, quote, "Netanyahu's a war criminal committing genocide against the Palestinian people. It's utterly disgraceful. Leaders from both parties have invited him to address Congress. He should be arrested and sent to the International Criminal Court. Make no mistake, this event is a celebration of the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. It's a sad day for our democracy when my colleagues will smile for a photo op with a man who's actively committing genocide," Congressmember Rashida Tlaib said. Linda Sarsour, we're going to end with you. While Kamala Harris is not there today, not presiding over this joint session of Congress, and many dozens of Congress members and senators are boycotting, she will meet with him tomorrow, as will President Biden. Your final thoughts, what do you want her to say?
I just want to make sure that we put this on the record that Joe Biden is also a war criminal. So I was not even surprised to see that there was an invitation to Benjamin Netanyahu to address Congress. And yes, Kamala Harris will be meeting privately with Benjamin Netanyahu, and we want her to say the things that need to be said. Kamala understands what is needed. And if she wants to become the next president of the United States of America, she has to demonstrate to our base, to Arab and Muslim and Palestinian American voters, to pro-ceasefire voters across the country, that she is going to disassociate from the policies of Joe Biden. She has to demand a permanent ceasefire. No temporary ceases. No. We want a permanent ceasefire. We also want the release of hostages, including Palestinian hostages. That is very important demand that Kamala Harris needs to present to Benjamin Netanyahu. And she also needs to support the an increased aid to the Palestinian people. There is famine. There is disease that is outbreak all across the Gaza Strip. So we need to make sure that all routes are open. And Kamala has to reaffirm her commitment to the self-determination of the Palestinian people. We will not take anything less. And we will continue to push her on an arms embargo. We have had support from members of Congress in ways we've never seen before. We need to stop all military aid to Israel. And we know that we have the support of the American people in this. The people in this country are suffering economically. Instead of sending billions of our taxpayer dollars to bomb and kill Palestinian men, women, and children, let's keep that money at home and help alleviate the suffering of the American people. So we're watching Kamala Harris. We want to see what she's going to do. We want to see if she's different than Joe Biden. Because I will tell you this much, the Democratic Party knew that it was untenable to keep Joe Biden at the top of the ticket, that they were going to lose key states like Michigan and Wisconsin and Georgia and Arizona and Pennsylvania, because our communities were not going to vote for a war criminal. And so we our movements right now are wait and see with Kamala Harris over the next few weeks to see how she is going to be different than Joe Biden on Gaza. The killing continues. Over 90 people in Khan Yunis just in the last 24 hours were slaughtered. And we want this to end now.
Linda Sarsour, Palestinian-American organizer, Beth Miller, political director of Jewish Voice for Peace Action, and Noah Graevsky, Israeli-born member of JVP. We thank you all for being with us. Next up, we speak with attorney Ben Crump about a police killing of Sonia Massey, a 36-year-old black woman shot dead by police in her own home, in her face, when she called 911 for help. Stay with us. Demba by Tumane Diabate and Balake Sissoko. Mali's king of Kora, Diabate, died last week at the age of 58. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. A warning to our listeners and viewers, we're about to discuss graphic details of police violence. The family of Sonia Massey is demanding justice after the unarmed 36-year-old black woman was shot dead in her own home in Illinois when she called 911 for help. Police initially claimed she died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, but police body cam footage has just been released and has proved that all to be a lie. Former Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson, who's white, has been fired and charged with first-degree murder for fatally shooting Sonia Massey. Grayson did not activate his body cam until after he killed her. But the other officer's body camera was activated when they arrived at her house. It shows the two men speaking with Sonia before one notes her stove is on and says, "We don't need a fire while we're here." When Massey goes to turn off the stove, where a pot of water is boiling, a deputy tells her to step away from your hot steaming water. Massey can be heard saying, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus," and Grayson takes his gun out and responds, quote, "You better effing not, or I swear to God I'll effing shoot you in the effing face." As Sonia Massey appears to duck and twice says, "I'm sorry," the video shows Grayson moving toward her and fire three shots, ultimately shooting her in the face. This is a clip of the exchange leading up to the shooting.
"What is your last name?" "Shouldn't have to think about your last name. Okay. You're not in trouble. I just need to
Massey.
Touch."
"Massey."
"What? You have an ID? That'd make things so much easier." "I just need to just a driver's license will do, and I'll get out of your hair."
"I want to show y'all my paperwork."
"I will what? Get your paperwork."
"What paperwork?"
"Okay. I got some paperwork."
"Well, just get your ID real
quick." "Well, let's get your ID session first, and then..."
"One task at a time here."
"Okay.
Let me here, grab your ID for me."
"Uh-huh. Okay.
Your ID. One task at a time. So let's do an ID, and then you can dig around for your paperwork."
"I don't know where my ID is."
"You just got that stack right there, maybe?"
"Okay. One second.
Check on her."
"Okay. Let me get this."
"No, we don't need a fire while we're here."
"All right. All right. Okay. Oh, where are you going?"
"Huh?
Where are you going?"
"Away from your hot steaming water."
"Away from my hot steaming water?"
"Yeah."
"Oh, I was rebuking you in the name of Jesus. I rebuke you in the name of..."
So after that, Sean Grayson shoots Sonya Massie. Body cam footage later records him telling his partner not to render aid to her. Records show Grayson has worked at 6 different law enforcement agencies in Illinois since 2020. All of this comes as Massey's family says police first tried to cover up her killing. The Guardian newspaper obtained audio of a call from the scene in which a deputy told a dispatcher Massey's wound was self-inflicted. The family said it was also given misleading information given by police that she was shot by a neighbor. This is Massey's father, James Wilburn, at a news conference.
I was under the impression that a prowler had broke in and killed my Megan. Never did they say there was a deputy-involved shooting until my brother read it on the internet. He shared with me. He said, "Brother, what was Sonya's address?" I told him. And he said to me, "This says this is a deputy involved shooting." Deputy involved shooting? What are you talking about?
Sonya Massie was the mother of 2, a 15-year-old daughter and a 17-year-old son. Her killing by police has prompted protests, and both President Biden and Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris issued statements saying Massie's family deserves justice. Vice President Harris said, quote, "Sonya Massie deserved to be safe. Doug and I send strength and prayers to Sonya's family and friends. We join them in grieving her senseless death," unquote. Harris also called for Congress to pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. For more, we're joined by Ben Crump, civil rights attorney representing the family of Sonya Massie. Can you explain exactly what took place? You've been out there, Ben. You're representing the family at this point. And talk about the cover-up as well.
Well, obviously, it's a tragic beyond proportions, Amy. This is the worst police shooting video that I've seen. I mean, it is so senseless. And the video is disturbing, but the audio is equally disturbing. When you look at that video and you see him move around the counter, even though he's trying to allege the reason he shot her was because he feared that she was going to throw hot water in his face from the pot, the very pot that he sent her to get. And then he moves around the counter, I think, from an objective observation, looks like to get a better shot. And then he has no remorse, no remorse whatsoever. When his partner says, "I'm going to go get my CPR kit," he says, "Nah, it's a headshot. That, don't worry about that. It's not going to make a difference. She's gone." And then at one point in the video, he says, "Just let her effing," and he doesn't finish his statement, but a logical comparison can conclude he's saying, "Just let her die." And so it's troubling on every level. She needed a helping hand, Amy. She did not need a bullet to the face.
And Ben, Trump, equally disturbing is the fact that the authorities at first even withheld the actual information of what happened here. Could you talk about that and how you were able to uncover what really occurred?
Well, the family said when they initially got to her home, they kept asking what happened, who did this, and they asked questions saying, well, did she have a history with the neighbor? We're trying to find out. Is what the family say they told them. It's under investigation. Never told them that it was a police-involved shooting. In fact, one of the relatives said that a nurse at the hospital was saying they said this was self-inflicted. We saw some radio scanner back and forth where they talked about whether it was self-inflicted or not. So we don't know what the narrative was initially, But we've asked for a thorough investigation of that as well. What led up to the killing itself, and then the aftermath of the killing with the sheriff's department. Because we don't believe Deputy Grayson should have never been hired in the first place. He was convicted of two DUIs. We understand that he was discharged from the Army, and he had six jobs in four-year span, different law enforcement agencies. We have reason to believe that he may have been terminated from some of those law enforcement agency jobs. And so the question is, why did he even have a job as a sheriff's deputy? The judge said at the bond hearing, after watching the video that was released yesterday, that he believed Officer Grayson was a threat to public safety.
Ben Crump, before you go, we wanted to follow up on another case you're involved in. In Milwaukee, Devontae Mitchell, the 43-year-old Black father who died last month after he was violently pinned to the ground by four security guards outside the Hyatt Regency Hotel, just a few minutes where thousands of Republicans would then gather for the Republican National Convention, footage showing security guards pressing him on his stomach with their hands and knees as he's heard crying out for help. The incident came after Mitchell was pushed out of the hotel. A witness reported seeing one of the guards also striking him on the head with an object. Medical examiner's office determining the preliminary cause of death is homicide, but the investigation's ongoing. Last week, when we were in Milwaukee covering the RNC, I spoke to a man who witnessed Mitchell's killing. Milwaukee artist and photographer Nick Hansen said he was sitting in his car parked near the Hyatt when he started to hear people shouting, listened for 10 to 15 minutes, then drove closer.
At that moment, I saw at least three security guards from the Hyatt Regency on top of Devontae Mitchell. I could barely see Devontae Mitchell because of the men that were standing on top. As I pull up, as I'm sitting in my car, seeing these men on top of this victim.
They were kneeling on him?
There was an older silver-haired man that was screaming, "That's what you get for being in the woman's room." And I was like, I'm thinking to myself, what is going on? And in the quick moments that I'm observing this, they were kneeling and pushing him down. The victim was laying on his belly, and the security were either kneeling like on his back or holding his neck down, and there were a couple maybe holding his legs down or his lower back down.
So that was witness Nick Hansen. We only have a minute, Ben Crump. You're representing Devontae's family as well. Talk about your demands. Last week, there was a major protest right up to the Hyatt Regency demanding justice in this case.
Yeah, Amy, it's just inexplicable to us. You have a video of a man being killed. You have witnesses who have given statements, but yet you're saying you still have to investigate. Why is it different when it's a Black victim laying dead on the ground? If the roles were reversed and Devontae Mitchell allegedly did something like this, and you have video and statements, he would have been arrested day one, charged, and sitting in the jail cell, probably being held without bail. So why is it different when it's a Black victim? I mean, how much longer do we have to take to finish the investigation? Justice delayed is justice denied. Justice for Devontae Mitchell, justice for Sonya Massey.
And the significance of Kamala Harris weighing in with a letter, Ben Crump. We have 20 seconds.
Yeah, she's the presumptive nominee from the Democratic Party. I think it's huge, her voice as vice president, to say justice for Sonya Massey, justice for Devontae Mitchell. It matters.
Ben Crump, civil rights attorney representing the families of Devontae Mitchell and Sonya Massey. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for director of development to lead our fundraising team. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Gazdur, Sharif Dokadus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Tammy Wernoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astu, Joe John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Hey, are you a First Nations, Métis, or Inuit student? Not convinced university, college, or vocational trade school is possible? Or wondering what you should do after high school? Inspire can help you and your friends. Register for Inspire's free Indigenous mentorship program, Rivers to Success. Joining Rivers to Success gets you access to great information, great prizes, and exciting content. Discover careers and post-secondary paths geared towards Indigenous students across Turtle Island, just like you. Register online today at rivers2success.ca. Again, that's rivers2success.ca. Prizes, information, and fun are waiting.